Hello, and welcome to High and Low, a Curse All podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is someone who just came back from Osaka. It was a long, cathartic train ride. I don't want to talk about it, but, you know, it was important that I went to Osaka to visit him.
Listen, I apologize for not writing you letters. What else do you want?
Well, I didn't write you letters either.
Yeah, I know, because you suck. Just like the dude in this movie. Sucksville.
Yes. The movie of this episode is Repast. I'm not sure the correct way to say it. Okay, starring Setsuko Hara, Ken Uhara, and what is her name? Yukiko Shimazaki.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first, episode we're doing. Movie we're doing. Narusa. Yes, that's how I say it.
We haven't done any Mikio Naruse episodes. I assumed it was Naruse. I don't know.
I didn't want to switch the R and the S again.
I have actually seen a different Naruse movie. I've seen the movie Yearning, which is actually pretty similar to the complete tone of this, where it feels like we're dealing with a very small story. Like, you know, it's not an epic tale. It's not, you know, a lot of action happening. It's just a lot of conversations. Kind of like Ozu, but...
like scaled down, where Ozu is like an ensemble. This is just like, it's a couple people.
Yeah, and also Ozu feels like, even in the sadder ones, it feels like there is a little sense of humor going on. These feel like, they feel very straight.
Yeah. I have Donald Ritchie's book on Ozu. I just started it today, and there's a whole section about Ozu and writing jokes and gags, so like, humor, like, your point is, like, is true, like, humor was important to Ozu, and he, like, had a whole methodology of how he would write jokes into his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Naruse kind of, I've seen one other Naruse, When a Woman Ascends the Stairs, with Nakadai, and kind of a good guy role. It's interesting, like, it's better than this one, I think, but the Nakadai, but When a Woman's in the Stairs is, it's pretty good. I don't think it's great personally, but it's similar, where it's like a very hyper, like a, not much happens, but it's a lot of conversations, and but you have Nakadai being Nakadai, and it's I think it's before Yojimbo, so he's not yet a big star.
So he doesn't sleep with like six women?
No.
Oh, okay. That's not the Nakadai I know.
Nope. Okay. And, so the cinematographer for Repast is Masao Tame. He was a cinematographer on Gojira, and this is based off a novel by Fumiko Hayashi. She was a novelist, and she wrote several books that were turned into movies by Naruse.
Mm.
This was her, I think Repast was her last book. It came out the year she died.
Oh.
And the movie came out later that year. When did she die? Give me a second. Here it is. Okay, yeah, I'm not sure if she lived to actually see them. She died in June, so I don't know if she lived long enough to see the movie. And it was co-written by Sumi Tanaka, who co-wrote a lot of movies with Naruse. And she was kind of one of the few prominent women working in the Japanese studios at the time.
Hmm.
Yeah. And she wrote movies for Kinoyo Tanaka, who was the first female the first Japanese woman to direct a feature film. We've seen her in Sendaken Number 8 and Utamaro and Five Women, and I think that's it. So anyway, Sumi Tanaka is kind of a big deal, and she was very important. And yeah, that's oh, and Fumio Hayasaka did the score. He did the score for Seven Samurai and Rashomon and a whole bunch of stuff.
Idiot Ugetsu scandal.
Yes, and he died. I think his last score was I Live in Fear. I think he died before completing it.
Yeah, he's
Anyway.
not listed on it for Letterboxd, so.
Yeah, Masaru Sato is credited with finishing it, and he did Yojimbo and a whole bunch of other scores.
Donate to our Patreon.
No. Yeah, so.
And then the second star is some lady called Setsako Hara. I haven't heard of her.
Yeah, she's some nobody.
Yeah.
She is in some pirate movie called A Woman in Typhoon Area.
Yeah. What else here? We got all these movies have a bunch of Japanese names. You know, when you look at the entirety of her filmography, she was only in 33 films. Well, according to Letterboxd, she was only in 33 films. So some of that might be TV stuff and stuff that just hasn't been entered.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff that has been entered. She had been at least 50 movies by the time she was in Late Spring. Yeah, she was already famous by the time she worked with Ozu.
It's about a cat who
Named Yuri.
is constantly neglected, other than by his owner, Michio, who adores this cat. But you see this cat, he's climbing on roofs, he's falling over. There's a part where one of the other characters, Satoko, and this is when you were like, I hate this character. She like picks him up by the scruff of his neck and like tosses him aside. You just want to reach into the screen, slap her.
Yeah, that really made me nervous.
And then later, one of Michio's friends is the glasses wearing lady's like, ah, I hate cats. She's like acting like it's a rat. That's one thing, but to like see an adorable kitten that like comes up to like nuzzle you and you're like, it's not a fucking lobster.
Maybe she's allergic.
Maybe she is a terrible person, and that's why she is unmarried. I mean, she loves to gossip, I'll tell you that much.
I like that character. She's fun.
Everybody in this movie loves to gossip. It reminds me of Good Morning. Like, oh, did you hear about this? Oh, I heard about that. Oh, no, I hadn't heard about this. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
No, it's not really about a cat. I'm sorry, audience. It's
No.
actually about a young man and a young lady who are married. The characters' names are Hatsunosuke
Or Hatsu, for
or
short.
Hatsu, yes, as they call him affectionately, if you're, you know, using the familiar. He's a
Yeah.
hardworking man. He does some sort of, you know, business. I don't know what he
Is it?
does.
Yeah, there are a bunch of telephones in his office.
He's
Like
got like
there's
a
a.
desk.
Yeah, but like, if not sure if you remember, but in his office, there's like a line of 30 telephones.
So they're telephone people.
I guess.
I mean, they say something about security or something like that, but I'm not sure what that was either. But that comes up later.
Think like stock or something. I don't remember. He
Either way,
mentions
he.
like stock markets and shit.
Yeah, he's a low man on the totem pole, so he doesn't make very much money, but it's a steady job. And so he's out of the house all day, and his wife, Michio, played by Setsuko Hara, is stuck in this town. The town, I believe this is the town he grew up in, so they moved back to
Osaka.
there, right?
Yes.
And
Naruse liked to set his moves in Osaka. Much like how Mizoguchi set his stuff in Kyoto.
The little town of Osaka.
Yes.
And she, when after they got married, she became a dutiful housewife. She
Yes.
assumed this role, And so, and she's miserable. She, you know, yes. she cleans all day. She, you know, washes the house. Yes, what?
But
stop interrupting me.
It opens with a voiceover talking about like the where they live and like the kind of poor neighborhood and describing it. Like it's Tsukuhara's narration. She's talking how it's maze-like and you can get lost in it and get trapped there.
Yes.
Not sure if you noticed that, but it's a little foreshadowing.
No.
No. Okay.
No one gets lost in this. What are you talking about?
She describes it as it's like a maze.
Mm-hmm. Well, she doesn't seem to go very far anyways. She doesn't even seem to leave the house, you know? The only time we get to see her smiling, she does a lot of, like, forced smiling, like when the neighbors are talking to her, you know, she smiles for them and stuff like that, and things like that. But when the only moment of true joy is when this baby kitten comes, you know, this kitten is adorable. It's got like a little stub tail. He does not talk. He's not a talkative type, you know. He kind of exhausted from whatever by the end of the day, and they just, you know, cook dinner. That's the whole thing. She keeps the house clean. She cleans the dishes. She cleans the clothes. That's
and the next door neighbor and the mistress. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You hear a lot of the neighbors gossiping and stuff like that. Directly across from them is this lady who is the mistress of somebody, some big muckety muck. And, you know, everyone talks about that lady. Like, we're not friends with that lady, she says at one point.
Yeah.
That's because she's a woman with a bad reputation.
And, you know, she's a bad news. And, you know, she's different because she's dressed much fancier than everyone else.
Yep. And she still lives in the slum, so.
Yeah.
So to speak. I mean, it's not really the slum. It's just lower income.
Yeah. It's still a poor neighborhood, though.
Uh-huh. There's one piece of trivia on IMDb, by the way. It says that this film revived the shomigenki subgenre in which lower middle class and struggling families are depicted. Shomigenki.
Yeah, I guess because Ozu, his thing was middle class people, and Mizoguchi was like women in general, even though his personal life stuff with women was more complicated.
What do you mean? He had a lot of girlfriends?
He wasn't necessarily like a feminist or that pro-woman necessarily, because like he would see prostitutes a lot, and there are incidents where like he would go too far, and a prostitute at one point stabbed him in the back with a pair of scissors.
I'd call that feminist.
Yeah, it's kind of weird stuff with, like, why, like, he made movies about women suffering, yet it's unclear what his view of women was exactly. It's kind of messy.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, at least we know he loved the ladies.
Yeah. And Kiyoshida made a lot of movies about women, but I forgot who his main actress was, who was in almost all his movies, said basically in her memoir, he doesn't like women. Which is another, like, huh, well, I don't know.
Maybe he just treats women and men equally. That's why he's good at making lady films.
Maybe.
I don't know. There's probably plenty of terrible women films that we haven't been watching because, you know, we tend to lean towards good movies.
Yeah.
So their life gets stirred up when Hatsuno Suke's cousin, or sorry, his niece comes to town.
His niece.
Satoko. And it turns out that she's run away from home, but she's this, you know, bubbly, modernly dressed girl who is just, she's a flirt. She flirts with everybody. She flirts with her uncle, you know, it's like every guy on the street.
And like the neighbor kid across the street.
Mm-hmm. The neighbor kid who doesn't have a job.
Yeah, he has no job. And immediately they have a connection and he's peeping. I think the first time he sees her, she's in the window, and he's just, like, staring at her. I can't remember.
Yeah, you know, she's a new thing in town, so somebody's got to look.
And then at one point, this cut German head where he's playing catch with some local kids that's hoping she'd walk by, if you remember that part, so he'd look good in front of her.
Very manly.
Do you remember that part where he's like playing catch with the little kids, and he just is looking around, hoping she shows up at some point?
No, I didn't watch the movie.
Okay.
Anyways, she comes into town, and it kind of becomes just another thing that Michio has to deal with. You know, instead of it being like, oh, we've got a nice guest and everything like that, she kind of just becomes another mouth to feed when they're already poor, and just another messmaker in the house.
Yeah. Oh, immediately before she shows up, Michio and Hachi have dinner, and immediately you can tell things are not great between them, because no one is really, she's trying to get him to talk, and he's just kind of ignoring her. And he mentions that the clock in the house has stopped, and his watch keeps going. I just took it as a symbolic way to show that Satsukuhara has kind of gotten stuck, and got stuck in a certain place in her life, where the clock is in her domain in the house, and the time on his arm, the watch, keeps going, and he's just moving forward.
Yeah. The house, time stands still, especially as far as he's concerned. You know, she's the one who's stuck there and knows that time does go by, but it's creeping.
Yeah.
Creeping at a crawl. Anyways, this niece, she's all like, hey, we should go, you're my favorite uncle. We should go out and do all kinds of stuff like that. And there's a flirtiness going on in this movie with a lot of people and their relatives, which I found rather to be uncomfortable, but I don't think it was necessarily inappropriate, but
it verges on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pornographer's level, but it's still like,
I mean, nothing's pornography. Yeah. Come on.
No, but it's like, yeah, this is a little much.
Yep.
Towards the end, it kind of goes over the line.
They decide that they're going to go out the next day, all three of them, even though they really can't afford the tickets, and just take a tour of the area, you know, just to have some fun. But when the next day rolls around, and Hatsune Suke and Satoko are ready to leave the house, Michio says, oh, I'm just going to stay here. It's like, well, I already bought the ticket. Like, well, go get a refund for the ticket. I'm going to stay here and do the work. It's almost like she's decided
obligated
to punish herself by doing this. Yeah. Like, exactly. She feels obligated, and like this is her domain, and she's not going to leave it. Somebody has to take responsibility is what you get the feeling of here.
Yeah, and like she, it feels like the house is a prison, because like the way she's always framed in it, and there's certain parts where like the door is like a jail, like the bars in a jail cell.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like she's framed like deep in the house, not usually like how to explain it. It's like she's like if it's a shot in the house, like she's usually not near a door. She's usually far away from the door.
Yep, she's either stuck in the kitchen or something like that. You know, in the living area.
Yeah, or you see her like behind the bars, like a prison cell, basically.
Everything is very organized, I guess is what I want to say, in the way that she moves around the house. The only time, like I said, the only time she shows any difference in joy is when that cat's in the house. Then, you know, she's walking around and having, seems like she's happy momentarily.
Yeah.
But she has her duties. But, Hatsune Suke and Satoko take this bus trip. Get to see the city, you know, there's a tour. Yeah, looked like a fun trip to me.
Yeah, and it's intercut with her just with Setsukohara doing chores.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh well, this is it makes you immediately go like, well, you don't like the husband to begin with, but it's like, man, he kind of really fucking sucks.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to. He's not. It's not his personal desire to, like, make her happy. Like, he's like, okay, you're going to do whatever you're going to do. You know, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Kind of thing.
Yeah, it just feels like he got married because that's what you're supposed to do. And, you know, that's it.
Right. But everybody's talking about how she's the most beautiful girl in the town, too, so.
Yeah, everyone talks, like, the. Like, outside of the home, like, everyone thinks they're the perfect couple because they're both beautiful people and, like, they're both physically beautiful and he has a good job.
Yeah. But they're still poor.
Well, yeah.
And there's that light flirting going on during this whole bus trip, you know, when they get off the bus and they're, like, walking around in some of the, you know, the older districts, like... And his niece is just very, you know, hands-on, you know, holding his arm and stuff like that. Talking about, like, the whole reason she ran away from home is because her parents want her to marry somebody who's, you know, he makes a lot of money. But she's also kind of, like, she says she's in love with this person. But based on her interactions with people, I'm not sure she knows what that really is. But, you know, oh, this other guy's poor, but should I marry him, you know? I wouldn't necessarily be happy if I didn't have money. But she just, it seems like she's one of the people that talks just to hear themselves, you know, their voice.
Yeah. She reminded me of, like, a more shallow version of Maria from Umberto D. If you remember, she was the maid who was Umberto's only friend besides his dog.
No, I gotta rewatch it.
Oh.
The only thing I remember about the maid in that is that she lit a newspaper on fire to kill the ants.
Oh, but she, with Maria in it, she's pregnant, and she has two boyfriends, one who is a tall man from Naples, and one's a short man from Rome.
Mm.
And, like, she's stuck between the two men. And that vaguely reminds me of Satoko, except Maria's a better person, more considerate person.
Yeah, Satoko comes eventually. I mean, she just seems kind of spoiled, which is interesting. Yeah,
like she seems to come from money to begin with.
Like, her parents aren't poor. And she, you know, there's that distinct difference between the two of them where they can show how little responsibility she has in her life and how she has people falling over her to, you know, see if she's okay and see if she's happy, you know, like falling instantly under her spell for everything, while Michio is just, she's a wife, she's a housemaid. But after the tour, they return home, and I'm not sure what the interaction there is, but the next day, Michio actually has something to do outside the house. She's having a small reunion with a couple of her classmates.
Yeah, one friend married a restaurant owner or something.
Yeah, that's where the money is.
A fancy restaurant. And she's meeting some friends from Tokyo who from, I think, college, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
High school? It's from school. It's not, like, clear, like, what school, but
yeah, whatever the equivalent of high school is, what I got the feeling it was.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, wait, they got, so in the movie they've been married for 5 years, so that would mean the war was happening, so probably high school. I don't think,
why, that means she's 21. No, I don't know.
I like that there's discussion of if she should wear Western clothes or traditional clothes.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've seen that brought up in a Japanese movie from this era of, like, should I wear Like a kimono, or should I wear like a skirt and blouse? Like it's really interesting touch.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, it's got to be appropriate for certain situations. Like, what is she? She's not wearing her kimono at the house when she's cleaning, right? I don't.
No, she's dressed Western at the
Yeah.
house.
So when she brings up that, she, you know, the whole reason she even brings it up is because I think she would normally, you know, have her kimono ready for that situation, but it's an old kimono and it's not clean. So, you know, they tell her, yeah, just go in the Western clothes, you'll be fine.
Yeah, and she's like, well, I want Western clothes are boring. And then you see her dressed kind of like a secretary, basically.
Yeah, it's like when Marge Simpson got that
The
whatever that
power
suit
suit.
was. Yeah. And she kept modifying it herself.
Oh, yeah.
That was for a reunion too. See, that was based off of this movie.
It's plausible. The Simpson writers are a bunch of dorks
True
who
that.
reference everything.
So she goes with this with the expectation that Satoko is actually going to prepare the stuff because obviously Hatsu has to go to work. So she goes out, meets with her friends, or you know, she's got nice friends. Everybody's having a conversation, like, oh, it's so good. It must be so nice to be married and happy. She's like, oh, like most of Setsuko's answers when people talk about like the context of her life and experience, she's like, do you really think that? Or yes, you know, kind of like a question.
Yeah, it's and I think they also bring up that her husband must be so nice because he's so handsome.
Yep. Because all you know, handsome people are always nice. That's something I've learned
Yeah,
growing up.
and you see her. Well, yeah, but so like at this party thing, you meet her friend Glasses, Doya. Who
Yeah, let's just
kind
call
of
it glasses.
glasses, yeah. She shows up later on, and immediately, I got the feeling. I feel like she's gonna be here because she keeps talking, so I feel like she's gonna show up later.
Yeah, she's talking about how terrible it is, like being single, and she's never gonna meet a guy. And she wished she had a, you know, Michio's life. Just must be wonderful being married, and you know, having someone to talk to all the time. And Michio's comment is like, "Well, we don't actually really talk very much." Like, oh, so that must be what being married is, which is something that
Yeah.
is said more than once.
It is. But I like that at this point, Michio is not bullshitting or putting up a front. She's just being blunt and honest. Because this is like the only time she can actually be this honest.
Right, she's with her friends.
Yeah, and they seem concerned, but they also I don't think they fully understand or know how bad it really is.
Right, she's not a, I mean, she's not like out there complaining. She doesn't feel, if there's one thing you get from her, it's that she doesn't really feel like she has the place to complain about her station because she thinks like I got married, this is just how it is. And like I'm not happy about the stuff, so I'm not going to talk about how happy I am, but if people want to, you know, presume that about me, I'm not going to tell them otherwise either. And so her and Glasses separate from the group and they go off to a coffee shop, I believe, to, you know, just get some tea or whatever. And they're continuing their conversation while they're there.
And that's
And
the point where the glasses asked her, says like, "Oh, you seem so happy," and her response is,
like, do I?
"Really? Do I?"
Yeah.
Not funny, but it was kind of it like the one of the few things that verge on comedy in this.
Yeah. Well, I do think Glasses was supposed to be funny. Supposed to be like one of those New York characters. It's like, oh
Oh
my
yeah.
God, you're so lucky you have a man. That
Yeah,
kind of
like
thing.
the I immediately think of Ms. 45, the coworker of Thana, who tells off the cat calls just by telling them to fuck off every time. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Ms. 45?
No, I don't watch movies.
Oh, Ms. 45's good.
I hear it's got raping in it.
It's not nearly as graphic as I was made to believe it was.
Okay, because I have been made to believe it was very graphic.
I've seen much worse. The movie Killer's Moon is, which is streaming on Shudder if you want to watch it, is far worse.
So when they are at this bar, there's a part where Michio gets up. And she's going to go make a phone call to tell her husband that she's going to be late. And she does. She calls her husband at the office and says, "Oh, I'm going to be out." And this actually shows a little bit of care on his part, because he's not like, "Oh, who's going to make dinner?" He goes, "Oh, okay. Well, have fun out there." You know, he tells her to have fun, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, to me that felt more like just not necessarily he cared, but like this kind of like, "Oh, I'm supposed to say that."
Like an automatic response thing?
Yes. It didn't feel that genuine to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I could go both ways.
I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt, I guess.
I mean, yeah, it'd be the first decent thing he's done.
Well, there was that time he... No, you're right. It wasn't the only decent thing he did. As she's walking back to her friend classes, she runs into two of her relatives. I believe they're two of her relatives. One of...
Yes.
Her two cousins, one of them is a man named Kazuo. Mm-hmm. And everyone who sees Kazuo is like, "Man, that is a handsome guy."
I don't see it, but whatever.
I mean, he looks different than her husband, but you know, I'm not being blown away or something like that, but, you know.
I mean, he's no Nakadai or Toshiro, so...
Yeah, you know, different strokes for different folks, as they say.
He had like a Spencer Tracy look of us, like the average everyday man. But Spencer Tracy was also like a Hollywood heartthrob for some reason.
I couldn't tell you what Spencer Tracy looks like. I've never seen a Spencer Tracy movie.
You should get on that. Most of them are worth your time.
You just said he was ugly.
He is a little ugly. Compared to, like, Cary Grant, he's ugly.
Anyways, they just kind of have a conversation, you know, like, I haven't seen you in a long time. You're so, you know, I can't remember.
He's visiting from Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I think they're both visiting from Tokyo. Yeah, him and her name is Yoko. I don't think it's ever said. It's only in the credits.
I see.
In pictures. Yeah, her name is Yoko, and she... is always very pleasant and always smiling, and you get a feeling like Satsuko is kind of irritated by her cousin, by that cousin.
She's irritated by a lot of people. And to go back to Osaka, we see, what is her name again? Satoko. Satoko's upstairs, and she's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, she's wearing, like, this Femme Fatale dress with, like, a stitched, at like, a fancy calligraphy S on, like, on the chest. And it's just hanging out in this fancy dress, and...
Yeah, and I feel like that must have happened in the middle of the day trip, because by the time Hatsune Suke gets home... She is asleep upstairs, so no dinner has been made, the house hasn't been cleaned or anything like that. It almost seems like she just stayed on the second floor all day. So he goes upstairs to wake her up, and she, you know, she's like, "Oh, you know, I had such a nice sleep, blah, blah, blah." And he's very casual about the whole thing. He's not mad at her or anything like that. And, you know, they're joking around with each other. And he's like, "Come on, get up." He's like, "Well, help me up." So he tries to pull her up, but she's not like trying to get up. She's like being dead weight.
Yeah, it's like a game you play with like a toddler.
Yes, exactly.
Which is another, like, this is kind of inappropriate, but not necessarily.
Well, it's not appropriate at first. I mean, they're just, you know, goofy relatives.
Yeah.
Goofing off. And then he falls over on top of her, and they're very close to each other, yeah. You know, kind of, you know, and they're laughing it off and stuff like that. But it's a little too close for comfort.
Yeah, again, not pornographer's level, but still, like, what's going on here?
Like, what is she pulling? Because I don't think it's him,
necessarily. Oh, no, he doesn't realize, he thinks it's just the game. And then later on, spoiler alert, she kind of says some things where it's like, oh, she's serious.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like a crazy impossibility to him either by his response. So I don't know what it means culturally. I don't know if it was like the content of the book or whatever.
Who knows?
But anyway, she doesn't end up getting out of bed because her nose starts bleeding all of a sudden. And so he's like, oh, no, you know, let me get something for that. Put your head back.
Yeah. Oh, there was a brief moment where one of the neighbor ladies was scolding her son, the son who has no job, because his shoes got stolen because someone stole the men's shoes.
That's right. I forgot about that. Right, and so when he came in, he left his shoes at the front door. Why didn't he, like, rush upstairs for some reason, or did I imagine
that? I don't remember.
But, oh, no, he was just spending time upstairs, so he wasn't watching the front of the house. So he comes downstairs, and he realizes his shoes are gone at that point. Somebody has stolen his shoes in the last, you know, whatever, 5 minutes. And, of course, Michio comes home for a trip, and she's smiling. You know, she's happy to have had taken this time off, but she gets in there, and his shoes have been stolen. Dinner has not been made yet, and he's like, oh, I'm hungry. Can we get dinner? You know, it's like, this is like, she couldn't even have one day off.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Yeah, and then things get a little weirder, because she's like, well, where's her niece? And he's like, oh, she's resting upstairs. She had a nosebleed.
And he's got a blood stain on his shirt.
Yeah, and she's like, why were you both upstairs?
Yeah, why were you doing it? Is this the pornographers?
Yeah, he's going to build a sex doll and then float away on a boat.
Hey. That's everybody's dream.
And then we're going to pan out, and it's going to be people watching the footage and be like, this movie's fucking terrible. Remember that? This bizarre framing device? I'm not sure what it's supposed to represent.
Still. It was good.
It's really good. Just that framing device is just one of many baffling things about pornographers. Listen to our episode on pornographers.
It's, or just watch it. You know, it's really good.
Yeah, both.
So, basically, from this point forward, Michio's not having this anymore. She wants Satoko to go home. You know, it's been a couple of days, anyways. I'm not even sure if they contacted her parents to tell her that she was there this whole time. What happens in the next couple of days here?
Next couple days, Michio. She is very, very distant from him, and he wants to know what's wrong, and he doesn't seem to understand what is bothering her. And she pretty much lets him know, like, that she's kind of dropped the facade of the mousy facade, and how she's in the mode of like, well, I'm just gonna be honest with you because that's kind of, I'm tired of how we are. And I think she starts talking about maybe she should go home to see her mom,
although she doesn't lay it out to him really until he sees her packing up, but
yeah.
There is a part where a man comes up to him at his work and is like, hey, let's get drinks later. Like, oh, okay, you know. And apparently there's some sort of scheme going on. And they use the word scheme, which is funny. But he goes, the guy who invited him out to drinks goes and makes a phone call. And he's like, yeah, I told them we're going to go to drinks. So what you should do is show up like, oh, I didn't know you guys were going to be here. And then we can sell him on the plan. So they do. They go out to a bar. And you're not exactly sure what it is, but it's something super shady because the guy keeps saying like, oh, we need you to agree on this scheme we're going to do, and it's going to make all kinds of money. And trust me, it's going to be a great thing. And they do like a bar hopping thing. And
yeah,
they end up at that mistress's bar.
Yeah. Oh, but I think this is around the, no, before he goes out drinking with them, he gets his advance of his of his pay.
That's right. He gets an 8,000 yen advance, and you don't exactly know what it's for, but apparently later he just says I need to get new shoes, and you need money, don't you? So he was actually thinking of her a little bit once again. He's not a completely uncaring person, but no. he does seem to be ignoring how unhappy she is.
Yeah, he doesn't. I think he means well. He just doesn't understand how to be a better partner.
Right, but there's one thing that's you also know that's going on as you see. You know, his existence is that he is also not happy. And it has less to do with the marriage. You know, she's looking for support in the marriage, and he is just trying to struggle through. So, like, almost as if there's a next chapter in his life, in their lives, that he knows they'll get to as long as he keeps just like towing the line to the right thing. But yeah. He doesn't come out and say that. They don't have conversations because he's not a talker. So as far as she knows, he's just being a distant butthole. You know about a distant butthole? It's like a butthole that's like on a hill, but you can still kind of see it.
Oh, I thought you were talking about flowering.
I don't know what that is. What?
Watch Pink Flamingos. There's a stripper routine at one point where you see a man flowering.
No dice.
It's a really good movie with some really gross stuff in it.
I don't like a gross movie. Okay. I'm just going to watch Dead Alive.
What? You'll watch that, but you won't watch an early John Waters gross movie.
No, that's not true. I won't watch Dead Alive either.
Oh, fine.
Because I don't find it funny. I don't find gross out garbage funny.
Okay, you're missing out on some good stuff.
I'll take your... I'll watch stuff eventually. Don't worry about it. I'm just saying right now. I'm just saying, if you sat me down in front of it, I would probably watch it.
John Waters, Female Trouble on Criterion. I have the Blu-ray.
Hey, maybe he's got a movie that came out when Spike Lee had a movie came out. We'll talk about it then. So he gets hammered, and by the time he's getting on his way home, the mistress who lives across from them is actually like, has to take him home because he's so drunk. You know, he can barely make it over there. So that's another thing on his scorecard, which doesn't look very good. Because this woman is just like, oh, hey.
Yeah, like she is. like she is like eyeing him the whole night. And she's like, oh, I can take advantage of him now.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's like, no, I want to go back to my wife.
Yeah, but he's good. He's good about that, at least. He doesn't seem to actually have a wandering eye.
No, and he kind of... as he's coming home with her, Setsuko Har sees them together, and of course she assumes the worst.
Of course.
Because, you know, they know about her reputation.
Right. There was a time in my life, and it's a good thing that I am able to admit this, and I'm sure a lot of men are in the same position, but there's a time in my life where I might have watched this and been like, why would she assume the worst? You know, it was just, you know, he was out drinking with his friends or something like that. I am not that kind of person anymore. I haven't been for I hope, quite some time. I guess I can't really know necessarily how I would have felt. But, like, now it's like, of course she thinks that. Like, any rational person would jump to that conclusion, unfortunately. Like, what are you supposed to think?
Well, I think, well, she had intentions with him.
Right, yeah. It's a two-party system.
Yeah.
And either way, he shouldn't have gotten so hammered he could barely walk home.
Yep.
Right, it's kind of a irresponsibility thing, a kind of like, I'm going home to my wife, I don't have to worry about anything else, I'm already drunk. You know, just the same state of life. Like, I expect the house is going to be clean anyways. I expect food will be ready if I want food, whatever.
Yeah. And he passes out drunk, and then she sees his money.
And she thinks, did that prostitute pay him? No. I don't know if she thought that. Like we said, he explains, and he got the money to replace his shoes and, you know, give her any money she might need for stuff around the house. And you get that damn clock fixed. Yeah. Another thing that happens before the third part of this movie, I'd say, is that our young cousin goes out and she doesn't call, and it's late at night, and so they don't really know where she is. And so at one point, Hasunosuke is, like, getting ready for bed. Like, he's put on his, you know, his bed kimono and stuff like that. And Setsukuhara is like, you know, I don't know what we're going to do if she doesn't show up like that. Like, are we supposed to be worried about her? Like, you got to wonder how they should feel about her, because his niece is a woman, like, she's in her 20s, right? Didn't she say she was, like, 22 or something like that?
Yeah, she's early-ish 20s.
Yeah. So, that's interesting. That wouldn't be that much of an age difference between them. But even though he's got his kimono on and stuff like that, he ends up putting on an overcoat and going out to look for her. Luckily, he doesn't have to go very far. He just walks out to the edge of their little section of town, and she just happens to be getting dropped off by a taxi.
Yeah.
And once again, this, Satoko has a way of talking about things where you can, any man who's around her just instantly doesn't care about this anymore. And, you know, she explains, like, somebody wanted to show me around the town, and then we ended up at, what's her name's bar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just lost track of the time, kind of thing like that, right? And they get back, or I think Setsuko once again sees them walking, you know, arm in arm with each other. It's just a little too close for comfort. Now, she already feels uncomfortable with the marriage and everything like that, so.
Mm-hmm.
Just another scene.
Yep. Let's see, where am I? I think that's the point. That's when Satoko says to her uncle, I want to be with you like this always.
Yes, she does.
Yeah. And it's just something else along those lines. And that's when he's like, I didn't think you were serious this whole time.
Well, there's a part later, or maybe before, I think it's later, where she's like, I just really hope I get to marry someone like you. And he, like, looks at her, like, serious, and then he's like, he says, like, you're such a flirt. And they laugh it off. It's like, but for a second there, it almost looks like he's like, is she saying that she wants to be with me?
Like, yeah, I think that was earlier.
She is. She's kind of a creep.
That was during the, I think during the bus tour.
Yeah.
And they laugh it off. At this point, he's kind of like, oh, I understand what's happening now.
Yeah. So
that's when she crosses a line.
Yeah.
Earlier.
And Michio has decided she's going to take off and go stay with her mother, her parents for a while. Her family. Rather. Her father doesn't seem to be in the picture.
Nah.
And this is when Satoko's like, oh, well, if you're leaving, I guess I'll leave too. You know, if you're going to, I guess you're going to accompany me. Once again, it's all about her.
Mm-hmm. And reluctantly, she lets it happen.
Yeah.
Satoko imposes herself on everyone around her.
And there's another part where she once again sees Kazuo, who is going to be leaving for the next day. She explains that she's going to be heading to, they're going to Tokyo, right?
Yeah, they're going to Tokyo.
They're going to the big city. And, Kazuo has been putting off going home, and he's like, well, I might be going home too. You know, do you want me to escort you? And Michio is, she just kind of is like, no. She doesn't say no, but she just kind of like ignores him saying that, which is something she does as a character.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to impose on anyone. You know, be an inconvenience. So it's also like she's putting herself into this position. But the next day, they take their bags to the train. You know, Hatsunosuke doesn't see them off because he's got to work. And they take a very, very long train ride back to Tokyo. And on the train, Kazuo actually sees Michio, and, you know, he says hi briefly, but she's kind of standoffish. So he takes the hint and is like, anyway, see you later.
And of course, she's staying with her husband's niece the whole time, and I feel visibly irritated that she has to be with her this whole time.
Yeah. And Satoko, there's a part when Satoko says that she met up with Kazuo and was talking to him on the train, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, he's so handsome. Once again.
Yeah.
But after a while, they get to Tokyo. And we don't see Satoko get off the train, so it's almost like they immediately went their separate ways.
Yeah, I feel like Michio immediately took care of her first.
Right. And there's a bit of a transformation, like, in her character as soon as she steps off. It's you can see the life, like, coming back into her, like, everything familiar once again, right in front of her. And she heads down to the area where her family is, and they own a clothing shop, is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, this, before she left, like, around the nosebleed section,
mm-hmm.
She's looking for her towel, and Hatsu says, like, oh, I used your towel on a nosebleed.
Yeah.
Which was like, I think that was the final straw.
I screwed up. I used the towel on a nosebleed, and I also gave her all of your possessions.
Yeah.
Because she needed them. Like, you jerk. She's walking through the town. She stands in front of the shop, and she just watches it while smiling for a while. She sees the person I assume is her sister. And I don't know if it's her brother and her sister, or her sister and her sister's husband, or vice versa, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
They're working in the front, and in the back where the main house is, she sees her mother putting down food on the table right there, and it's just like, I'm home. And she goes in, and everybody's happy to see her, and she's happy. And we transition to her lying down in bed, asleep. And one of them comments, like, why does she get to sleep all day? Why has she been sleeping so long? Like, oh, she needed the rest. Leave her alone. Her mother is so nice.
Yeah.
Like,
her mother, played by Haruko Tsuji. Look up her name again. This is not the first time she has played her mother. She played her mother in No Regrets for Our Youth also.
Haruko Sugimura?
Yes, and I think she played her mother in early summer. She played her mother in some Ozu stuff too.
Yeah, we've seen her many times. I recognized her right away. I was saying, wow, that actress.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I know her from No Regrets for Our Youth,
Yeah.
where she played her mother also.
And I texted Spencer and I was like, hey, that actress we've seen many times. I've seen her in, I think, 9 movies.
Yes. Yeah, anyway, yeah. I like their chemistry. Like, you can, like, knowing that it really does come off that they have good, like, familial chemistry.
Yeah, it feels like she's somewhere safe at the family. Her mother eventually wakes her up from the slumber and she's like, oh, like so early? And she's like, it's dinner time. Come join us for dinner. And she laughs. You know, she can't believe she slept for so long. And we just kind of, you know, she's just kind of living life at the shop there. And
Yeah.
occasionally we flash back to see what the Hatsu's up to, and he's just been working normal.
Yeah, the house is a mess, and
Oh yeah, that is, yeah, the house is like trashed. Like he's just put all his, you know, his dirty clothes everywhere. He's left, you know, leaves the food out at the end of the night. He's, you know, his work stuff is everywhere.
yeah.
Michio is not sending letters to him. She doesn't, you know, she makes it perfectly clear she does not feel like she has to. She's not entitled to, but she does send a letter to her friend Glasses, who makes a visit over to her house in order to check in on her husband because Michio asked
Yeah,
her to.
Snoop. And that's when, again, the mistress from across from the mistress nearby visits, and she's like, oh, you have another woman coming by.
Yeah, there's a part where the mistress, yeah, she's like comes in and kind of she's like, oh, I made this special for you, you know, made him dinner, this nice single man. And before that, actually, there was a part where one of the other neighbors was in there, is like, if you need any help, you just need to ask and I'll help clean up for you. And he's like, no. Once again, just like Michio, he does not want to impose on anybody.
And
So.
he is, and much like Joe Shishido, women just love him.
Well, Joe Shishido is a handsome man. You've seen those cheeks, you just want to squeeze them.
Exactly.
Anyways, so what I was saying is the mistress comes in and like gives him the food and she realizes another woman's there because she sees a woman's shoes. She's like, "Oh, okay, I'll leave." And then before she leaves, she picks up the woman's shoes and turns them around as if to be like they're ready for her to exit ASAP. And I guess that's what it was going for, but I was also thinking, like, is she a shoe thief?
No, it's just like I've seen this in other stuff where like you turn the shoes a certain way when someone's leaving so it's easier.
Oh,
So
and
it's
he
like
wouldn't know that, because he's a man.
yeah, no, well, not
Oh.
and
Right?
and
You know
one
what I
of
mean?
the yeah. No, a man would know.
Well, I feel like a man wouldn't do that
Oh,
for
that.
someone else.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
the
Unless
housewife
it's.
would be the one that was like, oh, I'll turn, you know, just to be polite, I'll turn everybody's shoes the opposite direction.
It depends. There's a Battles of the Honor Humanity movie where that happens, and a young recruit does not do that for his mother, and then the Yakuza boss he's working for scolds him in front of everyone, including his mother, that he did not turn his mother's shoes around.
Well, you know, those gangsters are good people.
Exactly. They help rebuild Japan.
They
And you know, and
funded the
you're
film industry.
that's kind of true, actually.
I know, you told me.
I think it was Ninkatsu. Because
This.
they were involved with. Never mind.
Well, no, that makes sense. The part with glasses where she comes over to visit the husband is the part we were talking about at the beginning with the whole, oh, I'm afraid of, I hate cats.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was like, oh, you know, I kind of like this character until now. Now this character can die. Luckily, we don't ever see her again. I assume she got hit by a train.
Nah,
Because
who
that only
knows?
happened in Ozu movies.
That happens in Jikoku.
Oh yeah, Jigoku and Tokyo Twilight.
Yeah.
And the red shoes. Spoiler! Somebody gets hit by a train eventually. So, Michio's mother is trying to convince her, you know, like, every once in a while she just gently pushes, like, oh, you should go back to your husband. You know, she's not, like, constantly asking her to do this or anything like that. And she doesn't want to make her daughter do anything like that. You know, she is very supportive, but it's like, well, at least you can write him a letter. And her response eventually is like, well, he hasn't written me a letter. But that she does sit down and write a letter to him. And the letter says, you know, this time apart has made me realize that I need you in my life. I need your protection and the kind of protection that you have provided for me this whole time. It's actually really touching. We don't get to hear the whole letter, just a little part of it.
Yeah.
And she gets it up, you know, gets it up. she gets a letter ready and she goes
over. Yeah, she needs to smell some boiling rice.
Mm-hmm. What? Oh yeah, she needs to smell boiling rice. Of course, I forgot. Branded to Kill.
Yes, Joe.
I almost bought that movie. You should. For the Barnes & Noble sale, and I was like, I can't afford this.
Oh, okay. That's a good excuse.
Yeah. And she goes to the mailbox to drop off a letter, and she does not end up mailing it. I guess is not ready to open up her feelings that way. She doesn't feel necessarily that he deserves to know her actual feelings like that.
I think.
And there's like this absence between them even further, because it's not like he has been reaching out, you know, trying to contact her, hasn't written her, hasn't made a phone call, anything like that.
Yeah, he's kind of still doing his own thing.
Right, he's still toeing the line. We do see him at his work again, and the guy who invited him out to tell him about the scheme comes up, and he's like, hey man, I got the paperwork I need you to sign so that we can do that thing we were going to do. And he says, you know what, I don't want to do that. It just doesn't sound like a good idea to get involved in that thing. And the guy's like, well, what do you mean? You know, you said you were going to. It's like, he basically eventually gets the guy to leave him alone and not sign up for this scheme. You know, when somebody comes up to me is like, it's a scheme, I'm going to be like, no.
Yeah, and the scheme is very vague and it's never clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're not joking with like, it's a, like he doesn't sign the thing. It's, we really do not know what the scheme is precisely. It's just kind of like they're doing something illegal with involving like that club, presumably, and the mistress, but that's kind of all we know.
And I'm getting kind of vague on these parts here because we spend a lot of time with Michio in Tokyo and she's just doing normal things, you know, around the house, cleaning and stuff like that. She does actually go and hang out with her cousin, and you know, they're just like reliving old times, memories and stuff like that, and she's like, way more smiley and happy in this at this point. Kazuo says like, remember we went to the hot springs as like kids or whatever?
Oh, yeah,
things like that. And you know, Michio's like, you know, that was, you know, a fun time. And Kazuo's like, why don't we go right now?
And she says, I'm a married woman.
I'm a married woman. And he, you know, looks kind of, you know, just kind of looks down. So I think this was supposed to show that even though she is separated from her husband, so to speak, she is not looking for love like that. She's not trying to find somebody else. But these two are cousins, so...
Yeah.
That's all I could think about.
I don't know. I don't know if that was, like, taboo or... maybe they're, like, distant cousins Who knows? Yeah. It's never clarified exactly.
You know, the one of the things that I found in English writing, like from England back in the day, is they use the word cousin for somebody they were close to, not necessarily somebody they were related to. So, like, a family friend could be a cousin.
Oh.
And so sometimes you'll read and think, like, oh, you know, I was quite in love with my cousin. And it wasn't, you know, my uncle's son. It was just, like, a close family friend that they referred to as a cousin. I'm not sure if that's what was going on here. Considering the uncle-niece relationship, I'm not... Yeah, I think it's just, like, a thing.
Yeah.
Eventually, Michio, unfortunately, has to deal with Satoko again when she just shows up at her family's house. And she's like, you know, I've run away again. You know, my father got mad at me, yeah. So I just decided to come over here. And everyone's pretty gracious with her, you know, but she's Satoko, so she's a little cloying, a little irritating. And we finally meet one guy who is not charmed by her, and that's who I assume is Michio's brother. And it's not just her she's not charmed with. This is when we get kind of a look at both of them through the same lens. He tells Satoko that she's being immature, that she needs to go back home, and like if she's going to be sticking around here, she does need to pull her weight, you know. Like she tries to like she asks if she could stay the night, and her Michio's mother is like, "Oh, I'll get the bedroll out," and tries to get their sister to go off and make a phone call to the parents. It's like, "No, no, no. I'll go make the phone call." Satoko and Michio, get out your own bedrolls. Don't make our mother do it. And it's like, he's like, you both are just like shirking your responsibility and expecting us to take care of you. And I don't want that around here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an interesting moment because I never saw those two characters. I never saw Michio and Satoko in the same light. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, I feel like it's different circumstances, but they are both running away from their trouble.
Yeah. Like, she becomes, you know, very, like, teenager-like when she gets home.
Yeah, sleeping in late, eating whenever she wants, yeah.
And, like, you know, and the whole thing, like, well, he's not talking to me, like, mentality, so it's...
Yeah.
She's become a child again.
Yeah. Another flashback to Atsunosuke at his work. He's meeting with somebody's uncle. I don't know if it's Michio's uncle or his uncle. But this person owns a business, and he's talking about how he's really glad he didn't sign up with those two jabronis on their skin.
Oh, yeah.
Because they all got caught.
Yep.
And he's like, I'm really proud you made that decision. And it seems like Atsunosuke is kind of like... I mean, he's being very, very modest. You know, he's like, oh, you know, it just didn't sound like the right thing to do to me. And the guy's like, ha ha! Oh, man, I wish I had that sense.
Okay.
And basically he says, like, when are you going to come work for me? You know, I'll pay you more. Or, you know, maybe you should look for a different job than the one you have. You deserve more money. You're a hard worker. And Hatsu is like, well, I have to talk it with Michio. I have to discuss it with Michio before I make any decisions, which is a kind of like, oh, he does actually care what she thinks.
Yeah. But since she's gone, he's finally kind of, I think he's finally understood.
Yeah. He...
Because
you can only... hope that he's got a clear you know, he knows how important she is now.
Yeah.
Because she seems to have also thought that way too, although neither of them are giving in to this, like, I need to go back to the other and admit that I was wrong or anything like that.
Yeah.
But to go back to Tokyo, Michio takes Satoko back to her home. Oh, and her mother is very, you know, oh, thank you for returning our daughter to us. Here's 500 gold coins. No, wait, it's not a quest. Satoko goes up to her father. I thought I recognized this guy.
He looked vaguely familiar, but I wasn't 100%.
Yeah. And she says, are you still mad at me, Dad? And he says, yes, I am. Like, and she says, I'm afraid of you when you're mad at me. And I don't like it when you are. And this is, once again, another person that she just can't charm into forgiveness or something like that. And he says, when your mother and I had you, we were so happy. And we've had such high hopes for you. But it seems like you don't want the responsibility of a grown-up life. And every time you run away, we are disappointed. Because we only want the best for you. Oh, and so there's a kind of a... I mean, it's a very nice scene.
Yeah, it is.
Michio returns home, and when she gets there, her sister is at the front of the shop, and she's like, oh, he's been waiting for you. You know, he'll be happy to see that you're here. And she's like, who? And her mom is like, oh, he's right over here. You know, he showed up while you were out. And she looks down and she sees those old beat up shoes that Hatsu has been wearing. And rather than go inside and greet her husband, she decides to wander off. And her sister's like, where is she going? We need to stop her. And her mother smiling says, oh, that's just her way. She just needs to gather herself before she comes back, which, you know, that's a wonderful mom.
Yeah. She's that understanding.
That mom gets 5 stars. But as she's walking through away from the shop, she ends up running into her husband. I don't know what that situation was. He doesn't explain what he was doing, right? He just happens to bump into her.
Yeah, he is wearing, like, those the wooden sandal things.
That's why he's not wearing... Yeah, he didn't have his shoes on. Yeah. I see. And they, you know, they greet each other. They're nice to each other. He tells her, my uncle offered this job, and I wanted to talk to you before I accepted it. And she's surprised at that. She's like, you wanted to ask me if you should take the job? Like, I didn't know you even cared about my opinion. And they seem honestly happy to see each other again.
And then they take the train ride back.
Mm-hmm. And she tells him, like, I wrote you a letter, but I didn't mail it. He doesn't ask what was in it, you know. And as they're riding the train back, he is asleep on the train. And she tears up her letter and throws it out the window. And she kind of nudges him awake and says, I tore up the letter. Did you guess what was in it? And his response is, oh, wait, oh, I forgot another part. They go and get a drink while they're in Tokyo. I forgot about that part. Yeah. And that's silly because he's like, you know, this beer is delicious. Ha ha ha. And then he's like, I'm hungry. And he like looks at her and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Which I think was supposed to be like him realizing he shouldn't just say things like I'm hungry. So like, are you hungry? Would you like to, should we eat? Instead of just his feelings.
Yeah.
And there at the end of the train, it's kind of a, do you know what the monologue there was? The voiceover?
No, I didn't write it down.
Yeah, but what was the message?
Presumably, you know, they have both. They have revived their marriage, and it kind of ends like One Wonderful Sunday, kind of, where at the end it's like, well, it's about the train ride at the end, but also there's a sense of, for now, things have improved. But doesn't necessarily mean everything's fixed.
Right. I got the feeling that from what the last thing she said, that like she realized that he is also unhappy and that they've both been only thinking about how unhappy they were, like not thinking about the feelings of the other person, and that she's going to be the strong person that he needs and hopes, she hopes that he will be the strong person that she needs. It was kind of a, yeah, I'm not sure how I felt about that last part.
Yeah, the end is like the one part where I was like, I don't know. I still need time to think about it.
Yeah. I don't know if it was her like being like, okay, I accept that I have to be a housewife. Or what?
Yeah, I don't know. It vaguely the first like part reminded me of Phantom Thread in very broad terms. I can't remember exactly why, but I got a weird Phantom Thread vibe a little bit. Mm. But yeah, like very broadly, nothing specific.
Anyways, that's it.
And I would recommend it. It's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I think Nehru's, I mean, I've only seen two of his movies, but I think he's got a tone and a filmmaking style that is, it's similar, like we said, to Ozu, and it's similar to Kurosawa's more family-oriented stuff, although he's big on the drama. And I feel like Ozu and Naruse they kind of undertone everything. You know, like there's all this tension underneath, and it's not, no major super bad event is necessarily going to happen. But the drama within the family is interestingly played out. I was trying to imagine the same type of movie as this in English, and I just felt like I would not enjoy it. Which I don't know what that says. Like, I guess it depends on who would make it.
Cause I was like, my first thought of this was, after this was, I don't think you can make this in, but Hollywood would have made this at the time because of the weird relationship between with the niece and the uncle and the cousins thing. I feel like Hollywood would be like, no, we're not going to do this.
Right. I mean, they could have changed that around, but I also feel like they wouldn't have made it because it's not, it doesn't have any zip or zazz or whatever you want to call it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's something I can imagine being produced on a stage as a play. It's good. You should watch it.
Yes, I'm a little tired.
We're comparing it to The Idiot, though, right?
Yeah.
So how do you feel it compares?
Not much. I was trying to figure out something like with Setsuko Hara. She plays like opposite characters.
She looked a lot like that other actress that's in this movie.
Who?
Setsuko Hara.
Which actress?
Setsuko Hara. That's the joke.
Oh, never mind. But no, I mean, like in The Idiot, she's playing someone who is very unhappy, who makes a big show of everything.
So it's got that in common.
But like in this one, she's playing the opposite of someone who is unhappy, but she's trying everything to not make a show out of it. Trying to keep it bottled up where an idiot, it's an explosion every time she's on screen.
Yeah, and she's had a life of trauma.
Oh, yeah.
So she has a reason to the way she does in the Idiot. In her past, her character, it's like her character came to a stop after they moved from Tokyo to Osaka.
Yeah, and I don't know. This her, like, she is this great with little subtle moments. Like in The Idiot, there's the moment where during the showdown between her and Ayako, there's this, Ayako accuses her of something, and then all you see is her, Setsuko Hara, her eyebrow twitches, but that's only movement you see on her.
Yeah.
Which is like one of my favorite Kershaw moments, period. Just that little eyebrow twitch, where in this, there are a couple moments of him, of the husband talking about spending time with the niece, and just like her facial reaction at certain points is like, is this a brief second of like, are you fucking serious? And then it goes back to like neutral. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I can't really think of anything either other than what you just said.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's good to finally get to Naruse, finally. I don't think there'll be time for a special on him, but...
You don't want to cover the people under the stairs or whatever it's called?
When a woman ascends the stairs?
Oh.
Let's see. You got 1951 movies?
I mean, I guess. I got, let me see.
I'll say the one I said last time with Alistair. The day that the earth stood still.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the story last time, so you can listen to how I first saw it then. Yeah, I recommend it. It's a really good movie.
So you didn't say Alice in Wonderland, right?
Yeah.
Disney's Alice in Wonderland is one of the best animated movies that they ever made.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely gorgeous, crazy characters. There's a sinisterness to it that makes it almost, you know, those early Disney movies had some nightmare-inducing material. Like I think of like the drunk scene from Dumbo, and
Dumbo just made me sad as a kid. I didn't like it.
Well, that part where his mother was singing, yeah, that would make you cry your eyes out.
That's the whole thing. I didn't enjoy it.
I feel like there's a part in here that has like a crying part too. Like when she's crying because she can't find her way home and she's singing that sad song. You know, I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm so sad. But you know, there's people running around with axes trying to cut off other people's heads and crazy people and yeah.
Yeah, I like the classic Disney stuff. It's my favorite.
Yeah, gorgeously animated. Obviously, it does need to be recommended. People have probably seen it.
Yeah, Catherine Beaumont did a great job. I think this was after she played Wendy in Peter Pan.
Wendy was 2 years after this.
2 years after. Okay, this think this might have been her first Disney thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's still alive, and I think she... I don't think she does much acting stuff, but...
She still voices Alice in the Kingdom Hearts games.
Still?
Yep.
Oh.
Weird.
Well, it's a paycheck, I guess.
No. I mean, I'm glad they went for authenticity. They can't get that Oogie Boogie guy. He's dead. What are they going to do this time? Do you have any other ones? Well, in that case, the only other one I will recommend is the first color movie to come out of Japan, Carmen Comes Home.
Oh, Kiyoshida.
Uh-huh. It's a musical, and it's about a saucy lady, Carmen, who had left home to, make her way in the big city, and she comes back, and it turns out when she was in the big city, she became kind of a dancing kind of striptease lady. And so everyone in town is like, hubba, hubba, whoa, my eyes are popping out of my head, you know, and she's got two friends mm-hmm. with her, too, and they're doing crazy things like sunbathing and flirting and other stuff, probably. Honestly, I didn't very much enjoy it because mm-hmm. I have a tough time with musicals in general. It's fun to see. They don't really, you know, the colors are nice and everything like that, but they're not. I don't know. There are things later that people do with color where it's much splashier. And, mm-hmm. like, a kind of musical dance production thing, you might expect it to be splashy, but it doesn't really come off that way. But, like I said, I think it is literally the first color movie that came out of Japan altogether.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, Kiyoshida did much better with color in The Ballad of Nurayama.
The Ballad of Cable Hogue. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
It came out in 1958. The story is not as interesting as other Kingsman movies, but the set design and colors and like technical aspects of it is really, really good.
Yeah, he did. He did some Naruse Ozu kind of stuff too that you could put into that same area, like Here's to the Young Ladies.
Yeah, he liked making movies about women. Yeah, but he didn't like women apparently. So,
well, who does?
I don't know.
I watched something from him from 1979 recently called Oh My Son.
Oh yeah, that's one of his last ones.
Yeah, it's like a message movie. Like it was made to or awareness movie rather to make people aware of this thing that like this guy in Japan. It's based on a real person who his son was like murdered, and he spent the rest of his life trying to get a government funded things for the victims, the family of victims of like crimes, of murders and stuff like that. And it's really touching. It's kind of overly long, but it didn't really matter like that. It was so long. I still really, really liked it.
Okay. Yeah, I've been meaning to get to watch some of his other stuff, but I haven't gotten to it. I know next up I do want to watch Immortal Love, his movie he did with Nakadai. That was the one time he was nominated for an Oscar, but he lost, of course.
Kinoshita or Nakadai?
Kinoshita for Immortal Love.
I see. Of course he lost, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot he lost to probably like Fellini or someone Italian.
Some loser.
Yeah. But, so don't you send people into space or something?
I send other people. I don't send myself. Please don't send me outer space. The now bi-weekly, every 2 weeks, science fiction and fantasy movie podcast. That's only temporary. We do have almost 150 episodes that we had previously done weekly on a whole bunch of different science fiction and fantasy movies. Most recently, we had Wendy Mays from the Pet Cemetery podcast on, and we talked about Lady Terminator, which is a must-see. You have to see Lady Terminator. It's kind of hard to get a hold of, but find it any way you can, because
it's a Southeast Asian exploitation movie, immediately I am interested. The Filipino and Indonesians make some real crazy shit.
Terminator ripoff that is all about a woman who loves making men's dicks get destroyed.
Yeah, content warning, there's apparently a lot of penis destruction in the movie.
Yes, and content warning for the podcast. We keep talking about dicks.
Yeah.
And then coming out pretty soon, we have on the classic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie from 89, I think. Or was it 91? One of those years.
89.
The one with the Jim Henson original puppets and with Sam Rockwell as a random gang member.
What?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. I didn't know he was that old.
Yeah, I mean, he's like he's just like probably in his early 20s in this movie, but yeah, he was definitely in it. Playing a teenager. Teenage gang member.
Huh. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But, and that, we had a lot of fun with that one. That'll be coming up pretty soon.
In a week and a half, I think.
At this point.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, for me, I was going to say Cinema Knife Fight, but that's dead. I do a blog called Jailhouse 701 Japanese Cult Cinema. I'm wrapping up the hashtag Chiba Checkup series with a movie called Legend of the Eight Samurai, which is like kind of a fantasy take on Seven Samurai in certain ways, and it's uneven, but it's interesting, It kind of is like part Dragon Ball slash Dragon Ball Z a little bit too. It kind of is a mess, but it's interesting and goofy. And let's see what else. That's it, really. I have a Hideo Gosha series coming up after that. Gosha directed Hunter in the Dark, which we did an episode on, and Heat Wave, another episode. Yeah, so Gosha thing's gonna happen, and then the next pairing of episodes. Here it is. The next pairing episodes will be the other 1949 pairing. We previously did A Quiet Duel and Here's the Young Lady, the lost episode. And this time, we're doing the heavy hitters. We're doing 1949 Stray Dog, Kurosawa's noir detective movie. It's basically a police procedural. So I think, Joel, I think you will really like this one a lot.
All right.
And your father plays a big role in it, too. And we're pairing that with Late Spring. And there'll be a guest for both of them, Stray Dog. Hopefully, Will Ashton. He's a film critic and film writer and Facebook friend, and he's front of flop, a flopper slash fan of Flophouse, so that's how I know of him. And for Late Spring, it's, I believe you know him, Dave Stonerob from the Realist podcast.
Yeah, I heard of that guy.
Yeah.
I've been on a few episodes of that they're realistic.
Yeah, so hopefully both of them can record. And that's it. Hashtag Knock Die Forever, Setsuko Hara Forever,
All the usual stuff.
yes. Was Music Gucci a feminist? Probably not.
No, I don't know.
I don't know either. I like to announce that at the time of this release, we will have, I think, 10, I think, yeah, 10 normal episodes left.
Well.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd make it this far.
You didn't.
Well, I don't know. It just feels surreal. Like, oh, we're kind of almost done.
Yep.
So, I don't know how many special episodes we'll get in between there. There are some I planned that will probably never happen. But, listeners, if there's one you wanted to happen and it doesn't, I'm not good at planning stuff. So, email me and complain to me. And also Joel on
No. Don't email and complain to me. I don't care.
Okay. So that's it. We'll see you next time for Stray Dog.
Bye.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show can be found on Facebook under the title of High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Podbean. We are no longer on Podiant. Thank you for listening. At minimum, I like a little medicine. It make me feel like everything diminishing. The venom, the harsh and all my mellows. I'm continuing to fight against the sentiment that make me want to die. In a world full of uptight gentlemen, I want to find a boy smelling like sweet cinnamon. A gross I'm tennis and what we take Benadryl to make my head a bit extra light. I feel it, I want it, I need it, I love it. I'm looking for something to make me feel nothing. I feel it, I want it, I need it, I love it. I'm looking for something to make me feel nothing. Driving through the bay, pray for understanding. I'll be silent for a day, wait until I vanish and I'm waiting for a break. Making kind of passion, never really can account for all the ways in which